Thursday, March 22nd, 2012, and the radio program is on the air. It's Primetime Sports, the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius Channel 157 and on Sportsnet. Some channels, all channels, various channels, we do not know.
We're not totally sure right now.
Apparently they're having technical issues downstairs.
I see, although I see connected out there, Bob, so they may have solved them.
Well, we hope so for their sake. As long as they understand that the notion that just because we do this and we don't have any more work to do, if they carry it on all the Sportsnet channels, we expect to be duly compensated. Otherwise, we'll walk.
There you go. Go to the test pattern.
Leave no doubt, a credo for chasing your dreams. Mike Babcock with Rick Larson. Of course, Mike Babcock needs no introduction. He's the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, also head coach of Team Canada, hence the Team Canada jerseys on the front. How did you describe it earlier?
I think it's a motivational book. It's about...
That's the word I was looking for. Here is the Red Wings head coach. Here's Mike Babcock. Hi, Michael. How are you?
How are you doing, guys?
Excellent. Motivational book? Is that a fair description?
For me... You know, I don't want it to be a hockey book for sure. It's used the background of Olympics. But to me, what it is it's just talking about pursuing your dreams. It's talking about pushing through any kind of doubt you have and maximizing every ounce of potential you possibly have. That, to me, is, I hope, what you get when you read it.
Clearly, you use athletics and specifically hockey as the basis for this. But just as clearly, you believe that these are life lessons that can be used in other forms of occupation?
Well, no question about it. I mean, right from kids right through. I'm a big believer that the greatest gifts you can give your children, number one, is love, and number two is a platform or a foundation that they can earn their own right to feel confident about themselves. I believe when confident people walk in the room, you know, and I believe that sets them up for more. It's more success. The other thing I'm a big believer in, and I get university-age kids, is don't be in a hurry to get yourself a career. Chase your passion as long as you possibly can. I'm a big believer that you're reinforced by things you're good at. You feel good about things when you're good at something. That usually is something you're passionate about, and if you can ever turn that into a living like I've been able to do, to me, you'll live a great life.
Mike, where in your own life, when you had to look for that confidence, what did you draw on in your own life and that you can kind of impart to other people?
You know, it's interesting. At the time, I sure wouldn't have thought much about it, but I'm so much into believing you got to be successful to feel good about yourself. Well, what are you successful in? You got one kid who walks out and there's a soccer ball. There he's 4 years old. He kicks it off the wall. He kicks it. It comes back to him. Hey, this isn't a bad gig. He starts doing it. He does it every day. The other kid walks out of the house and he kicks it off the soccer ball, rolls down the driveway on the street. That's not his gig. He's got to find something that he's going to be successful at. I think as parents, that's the focus, is you got to find a niche for your kids. And I believe you need successes in your life to feel good about yourself. Now, we deal with the elite of the elite. They've already done that. They've got to a level that's at a high level. And saying that, in pro sports, confidence is fleeting. I mean, it comes and goes. It's absolutely amazing. And there's... all of us who are at the top of our profession have doubted sometime. And I think it's important for the rest of the world to understand that, is that there's lots of momentary doubt. You just push through it to give yourself a chance to be successful. And there's something in all of us. We got to find a way to get it out. But I'm also a believer that there's a lot of good people around you. You just ask questions. You ask for help. People will help you.
I hate to point this out to you, Michael, but there's an irony here in the fact that this book is coming out at a time commensurate with when your team is losing six in a row.
Yeah.
Have you distributed copies of the book to all your players?
You know, I haven't, but in reality, you know, I knew that would be a question. When we started writing this book 2 years ago in the summer, and then we finished this book in September, so basically two summers, I was hopeful that it would come out on February 28th, but the publishing process, this is just...
Oh, no, we know, yeah.
Yeah, and it doesn't even come out, I don't think, until the 14th, but I wanted to be done talking about it, to be honest with you.
Right.
As you get it out, you're done, it's over with, you do your media buzz or whatever you do, and then, you know, I went to the publishing company, they made it very clear to me that there's a whole bunch of books that have been published in here that nobody read. Now, maybe that's one of them as well, but I think there's something to offer here.
With Mike Backpack. The book is Leave No Doubt, A Credo for Chasing Your Dreams, with written with Rick Larson. Was the writing process interesting, difficult for you? I'm always intrigued by it. Brunt and I have had many different experiences, both positive and negative, in doing books. And Steve has done a bunch of them. I've done one. What was it like for you?
Well, I really enjoyed it. Number one is Rick Larson isn't an author, and I'm not an author. And that was on purpose. I didn't want somebody who we all know to write the book, and so it was like them. I wanted to be in my voice. But I needed some help. He's a buddy I played ball with. He's in the ad sales. Basically, he's a VP at Leo Burnett.
Right.
In Chicago. And so when I was looking for a slogan for the Olympic Games, you know, just like I'd done at the World Junior, the World Championships, I started bouncing ideas off him. We came up with Leave No Doubt. The idea was, this is Canada's game. We're going to go to the Olympics in Canada, and we're going to leave no doubt that this is our game. We're the best in the world. That was what we wanted it to say to the players. Well, kicking it around, you know, we come up with lots of ideas. We came up with this credo, and so it had a number of lines in the credo, and that ended up being the chapters in the book. After the Olympics were done, and we had done this work, he'd been on me a number of times to write a book, and I said, well, when am I going to write a book? I have no time to do it. Well, once we got into the process, it was fairly enjoyable. Now, there was a number of times, without any word, that I thought, we're never getting this done. Or I also thought, when it was all done, I handed it to my kids. I said, is this going in a file in my desk, or are we going to publish this?
Mm.
And in the end, we decided to publish it, and we'll see what happens. But I guess what I like about it is we did it.
Yeah.
Finish something.
Well, you know, there's a scene in Back to the Future, at the end of Back to the Future, where the guy, the father, gets the copies of his book are delivered in the box to the door, and he opens up the box and takes out the copy of the book. And anybody who's written a book, that moment is really the moment that makes it worthwhile. It's more than the check you get, whatever, if you do get one. It's when you open that, and you might not get one, Babcock, I can tell you that too, but you open that thing up, that box up, and there it is, and it's something that'll stay with you the rest of your life.
Well, you finished it, you know, and
yeah.
The other thing about it for me, and this is no word of a lie, is I challenge my kids every day to put themselves out there. Now, why would I do this? Why would I risk the ridicule? Why would I hear, oh, geez, he's busy, his team's lost, we're 0-4-2 in our last six.
Yeah.
Well, because he's busy writing books. Well, the reality is I haven't written anything since September. But the fact is you open yourself up.
Sure you do.
But when you challenge your children to do it every day, why wouldn't you do it? I always thought I was going to be a professor at McGill. I thought I was going to be there my whole life. I thought I'd be doing this kind of thing anyway.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we'll do it again.
Mike, if one of the American players scores that winning goal in Vancouver instead of Sidney Crosby, what's the lesson then? Because it, you know, could have happened, right?
It absolutely could have happened. I don't know if there is a different lesson. And what I mean by that, and I talked to someone about this today, is our preparation from Steve Yzerman being named to selecting a management team, to selecting a coaching staff, to a coach's development camp, to a summer program where you brought in 46 guys and set up your structure, to the battle at the Olympics, fighting through the adversity, losing the Americans, come back and win. I don't know if you do everything the same if it guarantees you have success. That's how fine a line it is in our business. But I'm a big believer if you do good things happen. And if you do it over and over again and you leave no rock unturned, you have a chance to be successful. I tell those people all the time, is you meet with a player when you're a coach, me the player, and you have a talk to him, he plays a little better the next day, you pat yourself on the back. In reality, did he just play better the next day because he felt good? Do you really know what turns it? I don't know. But we did everything we possibly could. I thought we did a real good job in getting better each and every day, and we had a great player that seems to be touched by pixie dust, and he delivered when it mattered.
With Mike Babcock, the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings and the author of the book, Leave No Doubt. You mentioned earlier, I may be paraphrasing here, but fragility of confidence. And I think we all accept that that exists. I wonder if it's your experience or if you've thought about this. Is that fragility more applicable to inferior players? are great players more likely to be immune from that, these wild fluctuations in confidence?
So that's a great question. We talk about it all the time. We always say, how can a guy with this much ability be wound up about not scoring?
Yeah.
Just do good things. But it happens to everybody. You know what's interesting? If you're a grade one student and you're asked to get up and read and you're not a very good reader, there's moments there. It's tough for you. You're the valedictorian in your school. You're the smartest kid in the school. You get up to talk. You're nervous about the opportunity. You want to do well. But I think the pressure in that is the expectations you set for yourself. The confidence you have puts you in those situations, and you have a chance to be successful. If you don't put yourself in those situations, you have no chance to be successful. And coming back to your question now, I've never seen Nick Lidstrom miss a beat. I never have. But I've seen most of the other great players I've coached have highs and lows.
Interesting. But what does that say to you? Is Lidstrom just a complete rarity, a guy who, for whatever reason, has the ability to let it run off his back like water on a duck?
And maybe it's just that he doesn't show it.
Maybe it's there, right?
You know, it's interesting. We have a kid playing for us, Nyquist, last night, and he comes back and he's mad he missed an open net. And I just said to him, we don't need no reaction. You know, just sit down, get ready for your next shift. To me, that's what good pros do. Now, if you got to go down the hallway and yell and scream at yourself and break a stick and do all that stuff, to me, it's just about getting on. That's what Nick Lidstrom's done. You never know whether he made a bad play. I mean, he celebrates goals, but he's as constant as they could come. He hasn't seemed to fluctuate. But I can tell you in pro sport, even with our team right now, as many injuries as we have, and those are reasons, but there are also excuses. You got to find a way to fight through it. But your confidence goes, and you have to fight to get it back. But that's the adversity that makes you better.
Yeah, because we all fail, Mike.
No
right?
question.
You know, and failures is at least half the equation for more than half the equation for most of us, right?
Well, do you not think every day there's times you probably could have done something a little better? I think we're all like that. And that's why I thought Scotty Bowman was so great. He was about lifelong learning. He was continually changing and getting better. And whatever you're doing, if you're doing the same thing today that you did last year, pretty soon you're not going to be working. To me, life and sport parallel one another. And I think that's where there's lots of good messages in this book.
When you recognize the fragility in a player because he has not performed well or because something has happened on the ice, he was responsible for a goal or made a bonehead play that resulted, when something happens like that, how do you determine what the line is between pushing this guy and not wanting to completely demoralize him?
Well, I think that's coaching. I mean, we all know pretty much where you're supposed to stand and who you're supposed to cut off and where you're supposed to be. But to me, coaching is maximizing everybody's potential. And so I can't talk to Dan Cleary the same way I talk to Johan France. It just doesn't work. They're different people. And you can go through the 23 guys in our lineup. Now, do I ever say dumb things? Pretty much constantly.
Yeah.
Do I wish I could pull things back? Yes. In saying all that, I think being demanding but very appreciative is a key. And you want to build an environment that demands excellence at the same time is very supportive for the guys. I like to think that's what we've done in Detroit. We let them be men. When they need to be held accountable, we definitely do that. At the same time, having room to breathe, I think, is a very important thing.
Real quickly, before we let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't talk a little bit about your hockey team. You would acknowledge, I would think, you know, you're never as good as your record suggests you are. You're never as bad as your record suggests you are over long periods of time or short periods of time. And this is a fairly short window, but as you acknowledge, four losses, a couple ties in your last six games at a time of the year when I don't think you really want to be playing this way. So how do you feel about your club?
Well, I'd even go back further. Really, for 15 games, we haven't been very good.
That's true.
We lost a ton of guys all at once. And I'm not talking just average guys. Datsyuk and Lidstrom and Howard. And then when you get into our back end, we lost Erickson and we lost Kindle. and then France and Helm, these are real players. They're not players on your roster. They're real players.
Right.
Now, who cares? You got to find a way to win. We found a way, and lots of nights we're giving up very few shots on goal, but we're not scoring. And then when we make a mistake, we're digging it out of our net. In saying that, here's the upside of what's going on for our team. We got a whole bunch of kids playing a whole lot more than they usually do. We found out that we don't have as much depth in our organization as we probably thought we do, so we better change that. And a lot of our best players are going to be fresh and right up. We still have a real good hockey club, no question about it. We've been through it enough. We're not a bunch of kids. I think you're going to see the regroup start right away here just because I really liked two of the three of our last games. I think we've done lots of good things. We haven't given up tons of scoring chances. Would I have liked to win 2-1 in overtime last night? Absolutely. Did we compete hard enough? Sure we did. They're deeper than we are right now. We knew that before the game started, and so did Torts. So the reality, here's where we're at. We got a game on Saturday. The sun's going to get up tomorrow. We had an off day today. Let's get at her.
Mike, best of luck the rest of the season. Congratulations on the book. We wish you good luck with that as well. Thanks, as always, for taking time
for
us.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. Have a great day.
You too. Mike Babcock, head coach, Detroit Red Wings. The book is called Leave No Doubt, A Credo for Chasing Your Dreams. Zonny, when we come back and Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Sirius and Sportsnet, Bob McCowan, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios, Coley Campbell, Director of Hockey Operations for the NHL, in just a bit. But first, there's the lovely, the talented, the former catcher, now broadcaster. Use a trim, by the way, too.
I know. It's still in Hemingway mode right now. I just got back from Florida. Been in fishing and beach mode for the last 8 weeks.
Fishing's good.
Oh, so good.
Slaughtering innocent fish, you and Brunt.
I snuck out for a day.
Yeah, I throw them all back, though.
Me too.
I don't eat any of them.
So what?
Gently.
What has that got to do with anything?
They don't have any feeling in their lips.
Who told you that, a fish?
Yeah.
You don't want to go down this road, Zon. I got to tell you, man. I've been there.
Get me started. My son-in-law is one of the a world champion fish murderer. And well, he's like got awards and trophies and all kinds of stuff for bass fishing, I think it is. And we go out to dinner one night, and everybody's having fish, and he says, no, I don't like fish.
I don't either. I just like catching them.
There's something un-American or Canadian or un-something about that.
Well, I'll correct myself. I like salmon. I'll eat salmon. I'll go out to the...
Have you ever caught your own salmon?
Oh, yeah. I got it. Salmon.
Yeah, you can catch those with your hand, basically.
No, not the world.
Sure, you can. You go out in those rivers and streams.
Think of those bears catching them.
Well, if a bear can do it, exactly.
They're crafty.
There's no bears out there with fishing poles.
That's true.
Have you ever seen a bear?
I think that's absolutely true.
Have you ever seen a bear fly fishing? No.
No, I have not.
Never happened. I figure if a bear can do it, I can do it. You know? Can a bear play second base?
No.
So I think human hands are better than bear hands.
Well, you could, certain places in the streams, you could actually wade out there and just tackle one, but not where we fish.
And I should also point out that there are probably some bears out there that can play second base better than some of the guys I've seen play second base.
Probably. The bears are also a factor when you're out there wading in streams, too.
Yeah.
Because you might have to fight them for a fish. Just ditch the tackle and go.
Yeah, well, I think you lose that fight.
Yeah, I'm running.
So we're having an interesting conversation during the commercial break. You seem to have changed your viewpoint, or at least altered your viewpoint a little bit on what this team might be. Even though it's spring training, even though we all know better than to buy into anything that happens at spring training, as a general rule, we're all sitting here going, you know, maybe, huh, with this Blue Jay team?
Yeah, I'm looking at the word maybe now. And I said no before because they didn't do anything that really impressed me all that much this offseason to make the club better. But having gone to one game, I got a chance to see some players. Now, the conversations that I had while I was at the ballpark were more important to my opinion of this team. Alex Andropoulos, the bullpen catcher.
Bullpen catcher, yeah.
He is a guy whose opinion I trust. He knows what good stuff is. He knows what good Dustin McGowan stuff looks like. And that was the conversation that we had. He told me Dustin McGowan is back. His ball is heavy. It's running. The curveball, the changeup, the slider, they're all there. And if Dustin McGowan is healthy, he gives this club a legitimate chance to contend in the East, even under the old playoff format. Because you go from Ricky Romero, Henderson Alvarez, two really good chances to win in a five-man rotation, to three. And when I say three, I'm talking about Dustin McGowan has top five type stuff in all of baseball. And I'm talking stuff. He's a front of the rotation guy when he's healthy. He hasn't been able to stay healthy, and that's the big problem. But his stuff is so good. And I think having gone through what he's gone through, his maturity level is off the charts. When I talked to him, he just seemed like a completely different guy.
It's interesting that you've used those three names now twice, once off the air, once on the air. My first reaction, first time was, and I didn't say anything, was, where's Morrow in that equation? Are you not a fan?
I'm a fan of his stuff. I'm not a fan of the finish because he's inconsistent.
Define.
He's inconsistent. He'll have one great lights out game and then and then pitch two or three ball games that are just kind of.
Why?
I don't know.
Even a great lights out inning sometimes.
Yeah. Right?
Where you just go, holy
he
smokes.
Dominates people from time to time. But he has, and you know, I love A.J. Burnett. I still think he's a great pitcher. He's still a potential guy for me. He is yet to tap his potential. Morrow
may never.
May never, but Morrow is in that category, and he's a guy that also has front of the rotation type stuff, but has yet to put that season together where he is a guy you can count on start after start to get deep into a ball game and give you a chance to win where your club doesn't have to score six or seven.
You know, I think if McGowan hadn't, if this hadn't happened, I think it's changed the equation this spring, Greg, because I think if McGowan was not doing what he was doing and they, you know, obviously they were going to go, they're going to be careful about this and they're going to be careful about getting their hopes up. But I think they would have dealt. I think Alex Anthopoulos would have dealt probably for a mid-back rotation guy to eat some innings. And but I don't sense that that's going to happen now. You know, I think there was a time in the spring training when that was way more likely than it is right now.
Yeah, and you know, they've got Carlos Villanueva out there in the bullpen. I had a chance to chat with him a little bit the other day and, you know, ask him what's the role going to look like. He basically prepared himself to be a starter, and that's a nice luxury for them to have because I was clamoring for him to definitely be one of the five this year at the end of last year. Tell this guy he's going to be a starter. Because he earned it. He pitched very, very well at the end of the season. He proved to me that he could do it. But he's a nice guy to have as your long man in the bullpen. If something goes haywire with one of the starting five, you've got him there. So there's really no reason to deal. But Dustin McGowan, Ricky Romero, Henderson Alvarez.
Yeah, and I think that the conversation is going to be Drabek versus Cecil because I think McGowan will be the fifth guy because they can hold him back a little bit. I think they don't need him until, what, the 11th of April?
Well, and that conversation was Ashby and I had that conversation just earlier today, and he says it's McGowan and then it's Cecil or Drabek.
Yeah.
Well, I don't blame him because the stuff is off the charts. I mean, when you go up there as a hitter and you're facing a guy like McGowan, you're not licking your chops. You're not saying, oh, I'm going to get a pitch to hit here. He could throw one right down the middle, and they vibrate barrels. They're heavy. He throws a heavy ball. In all my years, I can't explain it. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you why some guys throw a heavier ball than others, but he throws a very heavy ball. It's a very uncomfortable at bat. Not only is it sinking and cutting and curving, it's at 96, 97 miles an hour when he's right. It's just not a comfortable place to be with a bat in your hand. And so when I look at the fact that he has a chance to be healthy and in this rotation, and you look at the way this club is winning ball games in spring training, they have a tremendous spring training record. Normally, I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at this club and I'm thinking, the starters are the ones that are doing it. They're winning these ball games against the big league ball players.
Generally, you're not seeing seventh, eighth, ninth inning rallies with a bunch of guys named who.
They had one yesterday, but they haven't had a starter.
Haven't had many.
They haven't had a starter blow up. Really, one of their top five guys. I guess McGowan had a rough go against the minor leaguers a couple days ago, but you haven't had one of those blow-ups. And, you know, that happens, right? Roy Halladay's blown up two or three times this spring to the point where people were wondering whether he was hurt. But it's been, you're right, the major league, the rotation guys have started the games, they have pitched against major league lineups, and they've handled them. And it's, you know, it is spring, but you can take something from that.
Well, no, it's encouraging because when the season starts 2 weeks from now, these players are going to be a little bit ahead of the other guys. And it seems to me like the Blue Jays are younger. They're a lot more youthful and they're a little bit hungry. They look hungry to me and they've come into spring training ready to play. So that tells me that they're serious about what they're doing. And I think that they're a little bit ahead of a lot of the other clubs at this point in spring training. Now, whether the other clubs catch up come opening day, 2 weeks is not a lot of time.
No, well.
It's not. It really isn't, especially when you're talking about getting two or three at-bats a day, four or five innings of work. They're running out of time to get ready. Now, the Blue Jays have gotten a head start, and you know what?
Get out of the gate quick with a young team. That's not a bad thing.
Absolutely. And if they win early and this team starts to feel it on an emotional level, look out. Look out.
With Greg Zahn. All right, so let's get to the other topic that was most interesting earlier today, and here's what I proposed. Everybody believes that there's a battle between Thames and Snyder for left field, and I'm not saying there isn't, but there is also a sense out there that Thames is going to win that battle. And he is the incumbent. He has done nothing statistically at spring training this year to say he's not worthy of getting that job. And so then the next thing is, okay, that means Snyder goes back to Las Vegas. Not on my team. He's my fourth outfielder. He's a guy who can play all three outfield positions. Now, he may not be Colby Rasmus in center field. He may not have those kinds of jets. But he's good enough, I think, to play center field in a pinch. And he's a left-handed bat. And your DH is a right-hander in Encarnacion. So there can be situations where you can use him as the DH. Both of them make my team. Thames may be the starter, but Snyder is my fourth outfielder.
Well, that's an interesting problem to have. I mean, if Snyder hits at all, he's my left fielder because you spend a lot more time on defense than you do hitting. And to me,
that's an interesting point. And Thames' weakness is defense.
Extremely. When you compare the two, it's
no
apples
contest.
And oranges. No
contest.
And I'm not saying that Thames isn't going to work and get better, but Snyder is already a plus major league defender in the outfield. He got exponentially better last year.
I was really
impressed with him in left. He's a better athlete than Thames. The guy can really run. He's a big guy, kind of a burly guy. You don't imagine that he's a good athlete, but he's a really good athlete. And, yes, he can play center field.
See? And if you can play center, you can play the corners.
Absolutely. You would not put Thames in center field.
I guess the counterargument would be that you want Snyder playing every day in Las Vegas rather than doing that. But I think the other thing has been done, though, Steve. Well, there's
we go back to the 4A thing with you, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You know?
Yes.
What are you proving by sending him back to
Vegas? On some level, I think organizationally, on some level, I don't think they believe in Snyder anymore. And I think that's just because, they don't believe anything he's doing this spring because they wouldn't even believe it. You know, he's had those moments in the bigs where he's looked great, but I think they're sitting there waiting for the other thing to happen.
Well, that's fine. If you don't believe in him anymore, then cut him loose and let him go play for somebody else.
I think that's gonna happen.
The one thing that I'm excited about, though, is they went out and they got Ben Francisco, okay? He can play a corner outfield position. He could play left field in a pinch, but he's a right-handed power bat off the bench. They were so left-handed heavy last year that they were missing that one power right-handed bat off the bench, and now they have it. And Ben Francisco, let me tell you, this guy can turn around a fastball. Mm-hmm. And when you come off the bench to pinch hit, you're not looking to moneyball people. You go up, you come up hacking, and this guy can turn a ball around and turn a game around quickly with one swing of the bat.
Well, you don't have room for five outfielders, do you?
No, you don't.
So, who's your guy?
If Travis Snyder doesn't make the club as the everyday left fielder, I got to cut him loose. I got to trade him. I have to trade him. Can't send him back to AAA.
I keep him as my fourth outfielder because he can give me whatever he gives me offensively. He'll give me defense whenever I put him out there. I can put him out in right if I have to, in center. I can put him in left. I can get defense out of him every night of the week.
Well, the thing about it is you don't need him to play center field when you have Rajay Davis. They already have Rajay Davis. And Rajay Davis, he fills a couple of different roles.
Well, he gives you speed, I know that.
But he can play the outfield. He can play center field. He's a good center fielder.
You think so?
I think he's a good center fielder.
See, I don't have the same opinion.
I don't think he has as good of instincts in the outfield as Colby Rasmus. I don't think he takes great routes to the ball. Oof. But he's so fast, he makes up for it. I saw him do it time and time again last year. But see, the thing about Rajay Davis, if he ever learns to play the on-base percentage game, he is a superstar in the making because you saw the way his legs can change a ball game.
Yeah, but this is not a 22-year-old who's learning to play the game.
It doesn't matter, though.
When is that bulb going to go on?
When you're down one run or tied in the end of the ball game and you need something magical to happen, all you need to do is get somebody on base. Timeout. Here comes Rajay Davis. Steal second, steal third, game over.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to happen.
That's what I said off the top. I mean, as far as Jets are concerned, well, so now we got six guys you got to fit in there.
Rajay Davis has to make that club for two reasons. He can play center field, and he can steal second and third anytime he wants.
Yeah.
Snyder is a great athlete, but he can't do that. And for me, he's still my everyday left fielder.
Yeah, Snyder can win a game for me by knocking it out of the park, and Rajay Davis can't do that.
You're right, but how many times is the guy going to knock it out?
I don't know.
That speed doesn't go into a slump. He can't steal first, obviously. He can't steal first, but he wants somebody else could get on base, and then you just pinch run. But you have to look at the balance of the club and think to yourself, I need a guy that can handle every situation. Yeah. So if I need some speed guy, I got to have a speed guy on the bench. If I need a right-handed power guy, I need a right-handed power guy on the bench.
And yeah, Bob, I think you got to think of the lost Travis Snyder, because that's the one they're thinking of now. It's not the guy who goes up and looks like $1 million or the guy in spring training. It's the guy who looked utterly lost at the major league level.
Well, I'd rather decide that in mid-May than decide that in the 1st of April.
Well, he's not going to get a whole lot of at-bats between. If he's the fourth or fifth outfielder, he's not going to get a lot of at-bats between.
Well, on my team, he'd get plenty of at-bats because I'd have him in center field.
Here's a scenario. You put Travis Snyder in left field to start the season and give him 150 at-bats, not 75, not 50, 150 at-bats. If he's still not swinging the bat the way you want to, then you can send him down to AAA and bring Thames back.
But they think the other guy gives him a better chance to win right now. I really do. Again, I think that's whether you can debate it, but I think that's the organizational decision.
Yeah, and I can't dispute the fact that Thames has not performed in such a way that he deserves to lose the job with Snyder.
I agree with you there. He's done nothing but swung the bat well since he's been a big leaguer.
Yeah.
He's been a good teammate. He's acted like a professional. You're right. He hasn't done anything to lose the job. But there's been a lot of situations in Major League history where a guy didn't do anything to lose the job, but yet he did because the other guy was more talented. And there's no question in my mind that the ceiling is a lot higher for Travis Snyder.
We got to go, but did you see any of Gomes? What do you know about Gomes, this young catcher is he from Brazil, I think?
Yeah, I think he is. I didn't get a chance to see him much.
I've heard some good things about him, too.
He's had a great spring, but I'm not sure where he fits.
No, he fits in the minor league.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have too many good catchers. That's something that you have to have a lot of because, you know what, look at the Yankees, the way they went out and got a great arm like Pineda, and they traded away the jewel of the organization. Finally, Montero goes. And they get a guy, Pineda, throws 97 mile an hour.
Yeah, it's like you can't have too many good talk show hosts.
You're right.
Craig's on. Nice to see you. Welcome back, pal. Coley Campbell, when we return, and Primetime continues on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. Team before the hour. It's the director of hockey operations for the National Hockey League. Here's Coley Campbell. Mr. Campbell, how are you, sir?
Good, Bob. Yourself, Stephen?
Fine, thank you very much. Looked like a scene from Slapshot the other night.
Yeah, it's...
That's pretty embarrassing. Come on, Coley. Isn't it?
I didn't say it wasn't. I didn't say
I know.
It was or wasn't.
I know.
It did. You know, I don't remember three guys fighting at the drop of a puck ever, other than maybe the first year I played in the World Hockey Association. It might have happened and pre the brawl rule, and it'll be pretty easy to put an end to this with some rules. We've already discussed it, just as we did the end of the game fight. If we attach automatic suspensions for multiple fights to a fine to the coach, that'll end it quickly.
Are you confident? I mean, obviously you've done some noodling on this idea already. Are you confident something will be in place for next season?
I'm not confident something will be in place, but I'm confident we'll talk about it, and I'm pretty confident the managers will have no problem passing it.
Look at
Bob. If you think that fighting has some sort of place in the game as a deterrent, this sure doesn't help anyone who thinks that. So actions like this. So even the pro-fight people will say, no, we can't have this because this is really embarrassing to our argument.
Well, yeah. Well, it looked like the East Coast Hockey League in the old days. You know, remember those days where, you know, it was like, okay, here yep. we go. We're going to light it up because we've got a full barn here. We got 5,000 people, and we believe they came to see fights, not really to see hockey. So let's give it to them from the get-go.
You said it right. It was Slapshot.
It was Slapshot.
Yeah, the Slapshot.
Yeah.
Now, Colin, if you talk to the two coaches involved in that game, though,
I still got to talk to one and talk to the other ones.
Okay. But, what's the coaching explanation for that?
It's like every explanation when you're digging down in these things, you know. I had to do it to counter the other person, and it wasn't my actions. Those were defensive actions by me for my team. So that's what you get all the time in these situations.
Well, yeah, he put his goons out, so I had to put my goons out, right?
Yeah, they did it. They did it last time we were there. We didn't do anything, and they forced us to fight. And we ordered Jensen not to fight. And the big guy they got in the trade from Chicago chased him around. Blah 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 blah. So you just have to put rules in place so this doesn't happen. And they're hard rules, like automatic suspensions, like we've done. Like at the end of the game, you guys remember, Hitchcock coaching Philly, Jack Martin coaching Ottawa. You know, they had about four players left on the bench. They just kept fighting, and even non-fighters are fighting at the end of the game. So, you know, I approached the competition committee back in 2004-05, and I said, the last 10 minutes of the game, this is what we need, because I always get the other guy yelling at me, you know, why did you let this happen? You know, that guy's a goon coach. He never fought a fight in his life when he was playing. So they allowed us 5 minutes, and that's virtually stopped any stupid fighting instigators in the last 5 minutes when they're all stupid at that point in time anyways in the game.
Right. With Coley Campbell. So we got a couple minutes here. Haven't had a chance to talk to you about this hybrid icing thing. I'm not a big fan. I don't get it. What's your take on it?
Well, you know, some of the managers felt that it would, we've had two injuries in the last 3 years, and they felt that I talked to Dave Branch about the automatic icing, and we tried that in the American Hockey League during the lockout, and no one's a big fan of the automatic icing. And,
really,
and
huh?
So, no. It just killed the game. This one, we got a lot of work to do. We're not sure we like how it's handled now. There's a lot of questions we have about it, and we gotta walk through it. So I guess the main point was we want to avoid any catastrophic injuries. We think the last couple of years we put some rules in place. We think we could harden those rules from hockey ops as far as any races. Like it's the touch, Bob, when the loser of the race is just reaching out and making that desperate touch, the puck, he knocks the feet out, and it's not on purpose, but he knocks the feet out. And so that's what they're trying to eliminate in this rule, and we think if we really harden up the penalty for any contact at that point, and we've already suspended and fined players from making contact on this play in the last 2 years, so we think we could harden the penalty up yet, which would be, you know, an automatic minor penalty in any contact. So we're not done yet with this one, and I think it's got a lot of work to do before it actually gets inserted into our game.
Yeah, just FYI, I'd go with no touch icing. See, I know you don't like it, but I don't. It doesn't bother me, and I understand your objective is to mitigate potential injuries, especially catastrophic ones. I'm fine with that. If you want to go no touch icing, I'm fine with it. I scares the hell out of me this hybrid thing. I just think this is going to be coaches are going to be go out of their minds when some linesman calls an icing when that coach thinks his player could have got there first.
Yeah, there's some questions we saw in the examples we had from the junior league down south. For example, where the puck doesn't make the goal line and they're still racing, you know, and it's not going to be an icing. There's
now what, huh?
Questions, you're right.
Yeah. Hey, we got to get out of here. We're a little tight on time. Yep. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks as always.
Take care, guys. Yep. See you later.
There's Coley Campbell, the director of hockey ops for the NHL. Have you weighed in on that?
On what?
On the no-touch icing, the hybrid icing?
I have no opinion.
You don't care?
Not passionately, no. Honestly, not passionately, no.
Do you understand the hybrid icing?
I've heard it explained.
And you don't understand? You don't understand it well enough to have an opinion on it?
I think it'll be fine.
You'll reserve your opinion until you have one?
I will reserve my opinion until I have one. That's a good way of putting it, actually. I like that.
Holy,
I'm going to remember that one.
Well, you do it most of the time.
I'm just not that stirred by the whole subject. But maybe I will be.
What does
Once stir, I see it.
What does stir you, Brent?
We have some good baseball talk tonight. I enjoyed that.
Would you like the shootout, too?
Okay, with shootout, sure. People like it. Makes the people happy.
Man with no opinion on anything.
I said I liked it. That's an opinion.
Thank God we actually had people on who had opinion.
I believe that is an opinion. It doesn't have to be negative.
Well, it's an opinion that you have no opinion?
I said I liked it.
My opinion is I don't have one. Well, but you not only have to have an opinion, you have to have the same one as me. See you tomorrow.